together.
Don't you ever go.
Just you and me, baby. That's all we got.
Don't you
I like it, I like it. Matter of fact, I love it.
Without you there with you, no life for me to see. Something like a miracle. Always knew you would.
Welcome everyone to Studio W The Buzz and the Soul Savvy Show with EB and Q-Lan Green. And I understand, Q-Lan, you have a special guest on tonight. Q-Lan and EB, the Soul Savvy Show, live on The Buzz. Hey, Q-Lan.
Hey, what's going on, Will?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's Friday and the Soul Savvy Show, we've been waiting for it. I've gotten a lot of feedback from your show last week, and just people are just anxious to hear what you have to say, you and EB, this week. So, looking forward to a great show.
Yeah, we have a lot to talk about. Me and B, we have a special EB. I don't know what I just said. I'm all over the place. EB, we have a special guest on. I've known him for a long time. He's a musician, he's a bassist, a drummer, plays locally in Oklahoma City. He plays everything. He's versatile, he plays everything. I want y'all to give it up, on Soul Sevens Radio to a musician, one of the best in Oklahoma City, Jamar Poteet. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on the show.
I know you said you were a little bit a struggle voice this week, so thank you for coming on. Oh, man. Listen, that happened to me last week. They know the listeners, they're going to come. They, like, say I need to take some Robitussin and all that stuff, so it's fine. They'll get used to it. Right. We go pray your strength that you get through. That voice come back 100%. Put the positive energy in there. I just want to know, what have you been up to? What is it you've been doing musically? What have you been getting into around Oklahoma City?
A few months. I've been really spearheading a project with a young man, Christian Pearson. He's a CPA turned. He kind of quit his six-figure job, and he's kind of pushing the music scene here in Oklahoma City. So I've been working with him probably for the last 9 or 10 months, just getting a jam session, trying to create a culture, a jazz scene here in Oklahoma City. So our efforts have been toward that right now. So we're once a month, the first Thursday in every month, we host a jam session at Saints, which is in the Plaza District in Oklahoma City. And it's featuring a new artist every week, or every month, excuse me. So it's a great, we've been doing it since, I think, last November, and we've had standing room only every month we've done it. It's been great, really New York type of vibe. So we've been doing that. I'm actually the featured artist this month in October, so next Thursday I'll be the featured artist.
That's amazing. How long? I guess we can go back a little bit. I'll give a little bit of history. Me and Jamar, we've known each other a long time, since childhood. I've known him. He's older than me, so he's probably known me longer than I've known him. But we went to our home church is out in Model, Oklahoma. It's like a really it's out in the sticks. But it's a great drive to go there. It's just great. Home church, and I think I remember just growing up in the 90s, it was you had the organist, the keyboard, I think maybe just one piano player, and it was a drummer. I remember Jamar and two bass player and a guitar player, and I just remember watching him when I was younger, and I was like, and I just remember hearing the whole four-piece, five-piece at church, and I just remember like, man, I want to play that. And then I just remember going through those stages of, like, just I was just going to church at young age. I wasn't really taking it seriously back then. It wasn't until I got a little bit older, but I just remember Jamar playing, and I wanted to know from us growing up in that church, what was it that you learned from church that you still take with you when you play your gigs, wherever you play? What did you learn from playing in church?
Man, I think it was just the experience of being around older musicians. I probably started playing at the church when I was 10 or 11. So I was around people that were in their 40s and their 50s, and so I was getting a lot of knowledge from them. Just traveling on the weekends out of state and coming back Sunday morning and being at church, I think those that type of discipline and work ethic, I just saw that and thought that was how it was supposed to be. That was being modeled. So I think that's kind of carried over just to me going to school at OU and just doing music full-time now and working at a church full-time. So that's all played a part. It's definitely because of my upbringing and the people I was around at a young age.
Yeah. Because I remember, this is, like, so insignificant. I don't know why I remember this, but I remember, you know, like, back in the day, like, I don't know if it's still like that because I haven't been out there in a long time, but I remember going when we were out there at Jehovah, and they would have, like, the long evening services. Like, they would have, like, morning service, and then it's that break in between there until the evening service. And I don't know why this is. I remember this, but I remember just sitting out in, I think, my aunt's car. I forgot whose car I was sitting in, and it was just waiting until the next service came on, and I remember just sitting out in the car listening to the radio or whatever, and I remember you were, like, next to me, and it was like, I think we were listening to the same radio station or something, and they were playing Sherilyn's Got to Be Real, and I just remember, like, you tapping your foot outside of the car door, and I was listening to it. I was like, yo, he's, like, playing the same thing. That's when I really started, like, paying attention to music, because I think then I was like seven or eight when I started paying attention to that. But that was, like, I don't know why I remember that, but what was it about? Yeah, that's so random. I don't know why I remember that, but I just remember paying attention to you when you were like playing it like the record was doing it, and I just remember noticing that. I wanted to know, in terms of your style, how did you, like, figure out as a musician, like, this is my, instead of, because, you know, like when you listen to other musicians that play the same instrument as you, you kind of want to mimic it, but then you want to do your own thing. So I wanted to know, like, when was that moment to where you were like, this is my style, or have you, like legitimized, like, this is how I want to play and what your sound is? Like, when did you figure that out as a musician?
I think it was probably about 2006. I think that was the first time I went to New York. I went to LA and New York in the same year. I remember going to New York and hearing, just the cats, man, like going to Smalls and going to the Village Vanguard. And I got to go to the Jazz Standard and hear one of my favorite drummers, Jeff Tane Watts. I just remember coming back being so inspired, and being immersed in that. I think my ears opened up. So, Clark Terry has a thing. Clark is a legendary jazz trumpeter, where he says you have to duplicate, and then innovate. So you have to copy your people in your past. You have to copy as much as possible just to figure out what it is and find your voice. And then you innovate when your ears open up and you get an understanding of who you are as a person, more life experiences, all that plays a part into your instrument. Around that time, I started playing bass, too. So I started to really hear music outside of the perspective of a drummer. And, it was about 2006, and that was huge. And it connected me in a different way. So now every time I sit down, whether I'm on bass or drums, I really try to express just the emotions that come from me, my personality. I don't have the insecurity of trying to sound like someone else.
Right.
Because I can't do that. I can just be the best of me, and that's all.
Man, I have so many questions, and we're, like, running, like, and I was going to let EB answer some, but I have, like a million questions that was going to lead up to something. I wanted to ask, I'm going to ask, like, maybe two more, and I'll let EB, I'll give it to EB. Like I said, with your style, your sound, I wanted to know, what do you think of, to me, I feel like most of the gigs I've got, like, from what I took from playing in church, because I'm glad that I tried to play the drums. I did the lessons and stuff when I was younger, but I got so distracted. I was like ADD, and so I wasn't worried about it until I was like turned 16, and that's when I got like the bug to play again, and I got reintroduced to music with piano, and I'm glad I did that because it like open, when I learned how to play the piano, it like opened me up to different genres. I started out classically trained and jazz trained, and then when I started playing it back in church, that's what opened everything. And I was like, oh, gospel, it started like connecting the musical dots, like gospel music. And I remember like listening to like I would go back to like blues classics, like listening to Albert King and all that stuff. I'm like, oh, these are like gospel chords, and it was just like, and like listening to Prince and listening to different kind of music. I'm like, oh, this is all the same thing. And so I wanted to know, in terms of the creativity, what was it? Was it a specific genre to like, I guess, that made you understand like the different elements of how music is played? Like when, I guess it's kind of intangible with learning your sound, like what was it, was there like specific genre music that let you know what your sound was?
Yeah, I definitely think it was jazz. Once I found out what jazz was, or kind of what that feeling and sound was, yeah, everything kind of opened up on a whole nother level. So started listening to Miles Davis and John Coltrane and Wayne Shorter and Herbie Hancock and just so many great, Thelonious Monk. Man, it's just tons. I just dove in. I think I got, someone gave me Kind of Blue, Miles Davis, and just the colors that Miles had in his tone and his trumpet was like nothing I'd ever heard, and it just connected on a personal level. Miles is known for being not a virtuoso, but the things he did play just touched the soul. So his music is timeless, and he's definitely probably one of my sincere influences. And everything came from jazz, for sure, for me. Once I got a piece of the jazz bug, everything changed.
And I think this is my last one, and I'll let EB ask. I'll throw it to EB. With that, it's like this big debate. I didn't know it was a big debate on the internet. I've had many conversations. It's mostly with young musicians I have a conversation with in terms of chops and shedding. To me, I feel like if you're not a part of some endorsement or, like, to me, I feel like it's purposeless to do it. Because I feel like it's mostly, like, trying to get other musicians to see how cool you play or whatever. I don't really see the purpose in it. And one of them, it was one musician in particular, they were like, that you get gigs by posting videos, but they were like that if you get this many amount of likes or views on there, that's what gets you the gigs. And it was a debate we had, and I didn't think it was true because I'm like, I've got many a gigs, and I'm just now starting to get ready to do some projects, some video projects where I'm collaborating with different musicians to put on the internet so other people can see, but I'm trying to package it a certain way. I'm not just going to throw it out there just to see, like, just for musicians. I want everybody to see it, but it's I'm packaging it a certain way for, like, marketing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I feel like most musicians, they negate the business part of playing. They feel like talent is just it. Like, they don't understand that you have to have a business plan, with, even when you, even if you're just a musician. And I feel like that's where I think a lot of them they lose the passion to play full time, I guess, because they just keep playing like they just want to back. I remember when I was younger, I would just take backing gigs, and I think I would just show up on time and just was punctual, and I was just that go-to. They like, okay, she shows up and she does this, and I would just keep doing those gigs, and then I got tired of it. But I feel like that's what, I think they run out of gas because they don't have a plan, and that's why, you know, I feel like you have to have, like, some kind of business plan. I think all musicians should have it. What do you think about it?
No, for sure. I totally agree with you 100%. Music, as far as your playing ability, is probably about 40% of it. The other 60 is like you said, the professional side of it. Are you punctual? Are you on time? Are you prepared? Are you a good hang? Do people want to be around you? Your personality, your people skills, your communication. That's what keeps you the gig. The 40% of the how good of a player you are is how you can get the gig in the first place. But how you keep the gig and how you get other gigs and bigger gigs is through the other 60. Because people are going to talk. If you're late or if you're not prepared, when somebody called them for a referral, they're going to be like, you don't want her or you don't want him, man. He didn't learn the material. Artists do not want that, so.
You go ahead, EB.
All right. Hey, Jamar. So I'm actually a fan. I was wondering, I know you started in the church. Were you self-taught or did you take lessons?
I was self-taught for sure, but I had a lot of guidance from the bass players and guitar players I was around. So they would tell me not to do this, not to do this, but no private lessons, no.
Okay, and which... with the bass and with the drums, which do, I don't want to say your favorite, but which do you find yourself gravitating towards more when it's time, you know, to do a gig or when it's time to write an arrangement? Which instrument do you gravitate towards?
I think nowadays it's bass. I'll say this. When I'm on the jazz side of things, drums. Everything else, bass. Just because I'm not there yet as far as a bass player on the jazz side of things. At least I don't think I am, so I don't put myself out there as a jazz bassist. But I do when I'm writing and I'm arranging, it all comes from the bass, so it's very hard to write and arrange on the kit, so.
Okay.
Oh my God.
I was saying that with the bass you are not as comfortable, especially when it comes to jazz. Earlier I was actually watching you play bass over Gretchen Parlato's arrangement of Week on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you were actually killing it for a second. It seems that I know gospel is, you know, your roots are in gospel and where, you know, you honed your skills, but it seems that jazz is, like you said, once you discovered what it was, it became like your first love to a certain extent.
Yeah, no, for sure. I definitely can do it, and I play some jazz gigs on bass, play duo gigs. This Thursday, the show will be jazz, and I'll be playing bass, but I don't count myself as a jazz bassist. I don't play upright. I don't play an acoustic bass. So I'm kind of a purist in that area that, you know, like cats that I know around here that are my really good friends that are some of the best jazz bass players. That's kind of where I hold my standard. So that's why I don't call myself that.
So, okay, that makes sense. Doing.
Man, I have so many questions, and we only got, like, I know you said you only got, like, it's like 7 minutes because you got to go and go do your thing. You have a prior engagement, but I'm like, man, I have so many questions. That's why I was like, yeah, oh, my God. I was going to ask about, like, in terms of, like, getting back to that, in terms of your pocket? What are you? Are you pocket over everything, or are you like, do you feel like with shedding, do you feel like it's necessary?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pocket over everything. Groove and pocket. That's how you work. That's how you keep getting work. If you want to go into the studio, people aren't looking to, or even to go on tour, people aren't looking for the cats that can shed and do a bunch of chops. When you go into audition for a national tour, they're going to ask you to play the song down like it is on the album, on the record. If you can't do that, and most of those songs are drum tracks. They may layer some acoustic drums over the top, but most of the time it's programmed. So you really have to hone your skills to be super, super tight on just playing a groove and solid. Everyone's going back to the old school stuff. Just good, feel good drums, simple groove that everyone can dance to. So
yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't want to like pinpoint church musicians. And some, it was, we got a couple comments from it. They would want me to expound on that. I'll do that one show. Because they thought I was throwing shade on church musicians and singers when I was saying. It's just mostly, like, those are the ones I see that try to transition doing, like, a gig, not at a church. I don't like calling, that's weird, calling a church gig. I don't try to call it. But they'll take that energy to playing at a small venue or a big venue, wherever it is, and I just see them, like, they try to fit any kind of solo into a set, and it drives me absolutely crazy. And
yeah.
They're like, and it's mostly a drummer. I want to, like, pinpoint every drummer. I'm just saying some of them that I see. It just drives me absolutely crazy. It's like they don't understand that people don't pay their money to hear you play. And they don't know that most of the time, most of the veteran singers that I know, they'll give, because even we had Karen White on last week. She said she lets her background singer shine and all that stuff. And she bigs up her band. So those veterans, like, they'll let you have those moments in there. That's why I don't trip about having a solo. I just like playing pocket because I know if I'm good enough, if I learn the song good enough and they hear me play it, I'm going to get that solo in the show. But it's like most of them that I hear, like, they're soloing, like, right off the bat. Like, none of them can keep, I'm like, what is going on? But they feel like I'm, like, too harsh on it. But I'm like, you're not, and most of the time, they always go back to playing in church. I just feel like it's church musicians. I feel like, I won't say everyone, but I just think it's sometimes they carry that energy over when it's not necessary, and I just not big on, I feel like it's just mostly like shedding on the internet when I see videos. It's just for musicians. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's cool if you could do that. Like I said, if you're doing it for endorsement, that makes perfect sense for you to be doing that. Like if you're doing it for Vic Firth or for DW Drums or whatever, like whatever company, instrument company that you're endorsing, like that makes sense for you to do that. But just to be doing it on the internet to impress, most of the time they're doing it to impress other musicians. Do you have an opinion on that? And we can get you out of here before, get you in my musician versus singer tangent.
Nah, you're good. I'm sure Cookie will expound on that a little later. I think you're definitely correct. Arius, for sure. I think it's all a mindset. I think it's all a mindset and a maturity about it. The mindset I try to go into, which is why I love jazz so much, why jazz is kind of my foundation now, even though it wasn't my first. I feel like it is the foundation of what I build everything off of now. So jazz is strictly improvisational music. Nothing really planned out. You may have a skeleton to work with, but it is true, authentic, in-the-moment expression on your instrument. So that takes an incredible amount of discipline, an incredible amount of selflessness. You have to be a servant to the music and to the overall cause, which means, and that's got to be priority, which means I may have some cool licks on drums I could throw in on this song, but I'm not going to because there are three or four other musicians on stage with me. And we're making music right now. And we're making music to inspire our listeners. So there's no room for ego in jazz. Or you'll get kicked off the bandstand really quickly.
Right, exactly.
One thing I love about New York in bigger cities, like, you don't get that in L.A. and New York. You go to L.A. and try to get work and do that, and you're, you know, playing chops all over. You know, somebody's booked you to play behind them, and you're playing all over her while she's singing or something. You'll probably be fired before the gig's over. Or she'll turn around and tell you, hey, my show, not yours. You know, and I just don't think that's not a thing. That's not a culture thing around here in Oklahoma City. And I say that in the nicest way. But I've been in the scene for 10-plus years, and that is just, you can afford to do that here, I guess, because people, it's not as cutthroat. It's not 100 great drummers waiting to take your job or 100 great bass players. There are a handful of people that work, and there are even more, even less of people that work in different genres and get, you know, the real work, the studio work, the private parties, that type of stuff around here. So it's just, I don't know. I think once you get in a larger market and you mature a little bit more, they will start to realize it, kind of turn the direction in which you're going musically.
Man, you're hitting on everything 100%. I know you got to go. I'm going to ask, is there any future projects we should be looking out for from you?
Man, we're just doing the Saint Sessions. Like I said, October 5th, Thursday, I'll be at Saint Sessions as a featured artist. But that's really the big thing I got coming up. I'm playing bass with a guy out of Nashville, Tennessee, Bryce Merritt. We've got about 4 or 5 shows over the next 2 months. It's all in Texas, Dallas, Houston. We got a couple in Arkansas, maybe one in Kansas. But, yeah, I'll definitely try to keep everything on my Instagram and Facebook and keep it open. But, yeah, just trying to work, trying to spread this music.
Let people know where they can find you on social media.
You can just Jamar Poteat, JEMARPOTEAT, just on Facebook. I think it's at J Poteat on my Instagram. And have a website. I just haven't made it public yet. I'm waiting until I record my original music or I make my website public. But, yeah, other than that, that's it.
Man, thank you so much for coming on. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I would need to have you on for the whole show because I had, like, way more questions.
Yeah.
That was the only few I could ask. But we're going to have you on the next show. We're going to talk about we're going to get deep into it because our listeners, they like it when we have split from my website and from EB's Followers and from Studio W Buzzes. They like the mix of the gossip, I wouldn't say gossip, but the popular stories. And me and EB are more into the music. So they're like, yes, finally, stop talking about these Trump people. So hopefully, people are going to be excited to hear this part of the interview. So thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure. We got to have you back on for the full show so we can talk some more music.
For sure. Anytime. I appreciate you guys. I'll have a voice next time.
Oh, man. Oh, they're going to, oh, man. I told you, they tell me, like, do you need some rubber testing? They, like, you need to get some. Like, they'll be fine. You'll be good. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
Will,
you, Jamar.
Will, if you want to, we could go to break and we come back. I guess we could do a little bit of the updates because we have so much, man. We haven't done updates in a while. So when we come back from break, it will have these, hit y'all with the back-to-back. We have another special guest coming on a little bit later in the show. So y'all get into these musical vibes real quick.
Yeah.
Trust your heart. Trust what you're feeling.
You are now on mute.
Let down your guard. Oh, don't miss the love it.
like the sweet spot on the couch, home cooked Sunday meals, you know, like grandma used to make, with potatoes so real and sweet, like old reruns of Human Days, and flip of shades. These are the things I crave. And if you didn't have much, it didn't matter to you, 'cause you knew that with your crew, you were always so true. Wanna get back to the time when love was all we needed, and with respect you were shown and treated. See, all I'm talking about, footprints in the sand, grandfather's wisdom when he speaks, comfort from healing hands,
the soft touch of a cool breeze,
in the middle of a sunny day,
I love feeling this way,
I long to
always have.
Cookie Turner, Home. And it was preceded by Lettucey, Let Love Rule. Hey, welcome back to the Soul Savvy Show with your hosts, E.B. and Q. Lynn Green.
That's the joint right there. The vibes real quick. Y'all getting to them dance. Man, she,
love
that, yes, songs from Cookie Turner. That last one is called Home. That was her single from her her EP she dropped. It was called Moment to Moment, Volume 2. Straight out of Oklahoma, she's native of Oklahoma City. I believe she's transport LA transporter now. She should be on the show in a little bit, thinking about real soon. So yeah, man, that's the jam. How do you like that, EB? You like that song?
I love that song. It's crazy. I'm listening to it, and it's, I was getting like a little bit of a Robert Glasper vibes. I was getting some Liz Wright vibes. But her voice, her tone is beautiful.
At that alto range, holding it down for all the altos.
We all know the altos are the heart and soul of all vocalists, so, yeah.
Man, those harmonies, so that's the one. I was going to play that upbeat joint, the old to music, the live ones from Moment to Moment. I was like, because that's my, I think that's my, my top favorite one. But that one right there, that home, those harmonies, oh, my God. They're like, like hella mellow vibes. Like, the whole track is like hella mellow and just you're just in a really good mood when you hear that song. So, yeah.
And you feel like, I need to go home.
Right, exactly. And it's, I think that's one of my favorite. I can't wait to, the when she gets on so I can ask her about the process of making that, because it's really good. And, yeah, it's like people like that that make good music, I'm like, y'all should be like, y'all can easily, like, tour off of that. Just, like, tour.
Easily, yeah.
It's nothing. Like, because you got a solid, like, a solid music to go off of. I'm like, any, you can play that anywhere. But, yeah, I guess we get to some of the updates. We have a whole lot. It's a lot.
All right.
Trying to pull them up. I know for sure the one last week when we had the legend on, Karen White. Oh, my God.
The OG it legend.
Was, it was a bit
OG,
of a...
OG, triple OG.
Triple OG. It was a bit of a delay with how massive the response was from that, because it was cool, like Friday night I got, it was pretty moderate, and then going into the weekend it was pretty cool, but something happened 2 days ago to where I was asleep. I woke up 6 o'clock in the morning. It was like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't know where I woke up from. And then I looked at my phone and I saw like so many messages from Instagram, from Facebook, from Twitter. It just like blew up with all these messages about the Karen White show. I'm like, yo, this is wild. And they had, she had posted it on her page, and she got a lot of response from that. I think we got like a top rated from all the shows she's been interviewing on. I think we had like the most top rated one from hers. Mm-hmm. I know for sure they all came over to the website. It's still like the last 3 days, the traffic's been crazy on my website. So yeah. And they've been tracking that, and they listened to the Michael Jackson versus Prince show. The one before that. We got responses from that. And I told y'all already that the other week, I think it was last week, I said I deleted all those. So those don't exist. Anything related to that, I'm not talking about it anymore. Cause that conversation is giving me a headache. But I know for sure last week we had a lot. They I'm trying to pull it up now. They said, one of them said a great interview, and then a lot of them loved the music. The Love Thought.
Oh, yeah.
They were, that was like the first thing somebody commented on. I'm trying to get their names right on here. But yeah, Love Thought, and then the song was called Lame Excuse. Y'all can.
Right, from Yell in the Door.
It should be available online, because that movie soundtrack, it had premiered, I think, September 4th. It was like, I think the first week of September is already released. So it's available now, I believe. So wherever you purchase music at, I would look up Lame Excuse, or with an S, maybe got Lame Excuses. You check on wherever you get music from. It should be on there. But yeah, that joint is popping. So
I told him the name of the movie is Gale in the Storm, G-A-L-E.
Gale in the Storm, yeah, make sure y'all check that out. She said you can go to her Karen White website. I think I have it linked. If you go to the show, we just the Karen White interview on soulsavage.com, I have the link to her website, and you go directly on there from my website. If you don't want to type it in, you go to my website and just click on the Karen White interview, and if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, you'll see Karen White's website on there. And you just click on it, and it'll take you directly on there. And you can keep up to date with Shezza. Man, that interview was crazy. It was like, I was like, wow. Like, it was just me being shocked by, like, how long it took her to do the Way You Love Me song. I was,
man,
like, for sure that song
that
took a long time.
When you asked that question, you were asking her, which song does she feel took the longest, and which one was the easiest? I was definitely expecting that song to be one of the ones that took the longest. And she said, no, that was one of the ones she was able to knock out. Breath Control is crazy on that.
I know, right? And then when she was, I read what her response when she said in the interview, she told us on the show, but I read she said that she enjoyed it and that she says the things she did. Like, I'm like, that's what happens on this show. I'm like, you get comfortable. I'm like, y'all gotta, cause we get real comfortable on here. So that's why I'm trying. I need to be a prerequisite before I get anybody on. Like, listen, whatever you want me to edit out, We can talk about it. But we gonna talk about it. And as crazy as I didn't ask her because he was a legend. I'm like, I'm not gonna get her in. I was thinking about getting her into my crazy conversation, but I'm like, I don't want her to get in this talking about the crazy stuff we talk about, like talking about like Rick James, like and the cocaine stuff, like crazy stories like that.
Oh, but next time, Karen, if you're listening. Next time,
I'm going to get you ready for that. Because, yeah, we go there on this show. I don't try to be PG-13. Listen, it's a lot of behind-the-scenes conversation. When I do print interviews, it's a lot of things these celebrities say to me that I don't, like, especially with Bilal. If y'all would have heard what he was saying when y'all be trying to group him in with Neo Soul, that was lightweight what he said. Because I still got the audio from him. If y'all would have heard what he said. Oh, my God. It's a lot of stuff I don't reveal. I had to edit a little bit of that interview. So he wouldn't, like, it wouldn't seem like he was bashing. But, yeah, because it wouldn't sound good. Because they only, like, you know, like how it is, it comes off weird in print. And I didn't want people to, like, try to say, like, oh, he said this or whatever. Like, you know. People
get real selective about what they hear, and they want to take this part of this and make it seem like it's something else. No.
Because people do that all the time when they fight
stuff.
Yeah, man, because they'll fight the source, but then they'll take, like, excerpts of what I said. Like, I did the Marsha interview, and I'm like, why do they do that? Just take if you're going to, like, they cited my source, I was glad they did that, but I'm like, yo, don't take excerpts from the article, like, just post the whole thing on there if you're going to, I mean, whatever it is, but don't just take portions of it, because I'm like, because then that's when it starts trying to change the story of what I said. So, yeah. It's a lot of stuff. So, yeah, whoever comes on, like, yeah, we got to have a conversation before we get on air. she was dropping gems. Like, she was kept going. Like, I got her into my musician versus singer thing. I was just saying so. I'm like, see that? That's all I know. Like, I'm not crazy, because I be thinking I'm the only person that be thinking this. Like, that's why I got to do these projects of, like, getting musicians versus singers thing going on. Because we're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to get a group of musicians, and I'm going to get a group of singers, and we just hash out all this stuff. Just hash it out. And just we're going to get all out in the open. We're going to let people say how they feel. Just get off your chest and just say it. Like, just get it out. I'm gonna try to get Cookie on this musician versus singer tangent because I got a little bit of hostility towards singers. Nobody in particular, it's just in general. I have issues.
In general.
So we gonna
see. I'm team singer. I love the singers all the way, and you team musician.
Right, but yeah, we gonna get to the bottom of it of this whole beef situation. We gonna get into. I guess we could get a little bit when she gets on, but we just finish these updates. So you heard me coming in on the end of our tangent of getting into our updates with. I was making sure I didn't even look on the line to see if you were on yet. We just sit here talking. I was about to get on a musician versus singer tangent. But,
that's some A's old.
Right.
Mm. I actually, like, my very first band actually broke up because of that. So it was.
Man, ladies and gentlemen, y'all give up right now on Soul Savage Radio. We have a great guest on. She's a singer. She's dropped two great EPs. One of the Harvey Moment Volume 1. The second one was called A Moment to Moment Volume 2. We just played your song from their home. We just came to break from that. Damn it, if I would have thinking, I could have played at least another one. I should have played another one, but EB had some more songs, so I was like, we'll play those. But yeah, damn, that's what I should have did, was played two of your songs back to back instead of that Letters to One. But yeah, that is to home. Y'all give it up for Cookie Turner. She's an amazing singer.
Hi.
Everything. Backup vocals. Matt, I have a weird story. It's only weird because I saw you and I didn't get a chance to speak to you. It was 2 years ago. I had an interview I was doing with Bilal. I had never been to Ice Event Center. I had never heard of it.
The first time he opened.
Yeah, and got the interview with Bilal, and it was a little tricky getting it, and I had to go through the publicist to get it. And I was like, okay, I've never been here, so I'm gonna try to figure this out. And so I got with my assistant, and we drove up there, and we hit up Jay Wiggins. Shout out to him, a photographer from Oklahoma City.
Yep.
And hit him up, and we met him up there, and I didn't know what to expect when I got there. I didn't know, I had never been to the venue. And I was like, oh, it's on the east side of Oklahoma City. I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And so when I got there, yeah, and it was cool. And then I was just trying, like, when I do interviews, I try to get in and out, because we had to go back to Dallas that night. I was like, okay, we're going to get in and out with this interview. I only have a few questions. I was like, blah, 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 we're going to get this done. We got it arranged. Did the interview with Bilal, and then I came out. And, during the interview, I was asking Bilal some questions, and I heard some music in there, and I think you were singing Lauryn Hill. I heard music coming through there. It was like Lauryn Hill, X-Factor.
Yeah,
I think you were singing it. I heard you. I was like, who, is somebody singing out there? And they were like, oh, doing mic check. I was like, okay, cool. And so after I did the interview, I was talking to Jay, and I was telling him, we were wrapping up doing the business or whatever, and I was telling him whatever, whatever, and I was like, yo, that looks like that singer Cookie or whatever. But when I thought of it, I was still talking to Jay, so when I got done talking to him, I was like, yo, is that singer Cookie? And he was like, yeah, yeah, that's her. She's opening or whatever for Blau or whatever. I'm like, oh, man. And then I had thought of an idea, because I was trying to get, like, some musicians and singers together to do, like, a little docu-series. I was like, damn, I was trying to get your information, but I didn't know where you went. You had already left. And I was like, damn. And I got to leave, like, right after that. And I was like, damn it. I was like, and I missed it. He was like, yo, just hit her up on Facebook. I was like, yo, I don't know. I don't hit people. He was like, no, you know how Jay is. He's like, just do it. He's like, I'll let her know. Just hit her up. I was like, okay. And then that's when all that happened, but you had already were like, getting ready to leave. I was like, because I was going to get you on a show, because I do live shows in Oklahoma City. I was like, damn it, she already left for Oklahoma City. So I was like, damn it. Well, I was like, we got you on the show now. So, but yeah, that's just a weird story of like meeting you, but not meeting you. So that's what made it weird. Because I was like, I wanted to meet you, but you had already left. I was like, or you were somewhere in the atmosphere and I didn't see you, but I had to leave. So, because that was crazy. So yeah. But yeah, what have you been? I know you're LA transport now, or transplant, I guess you say. So what's that experience been like since you've been there?
It has been a learning experience, mostly. This is new for me because I am Oklahoma born and bred. I actually grew up on the east side. Where Ice is, my first house is like a block away. My grandma's house is like behind Ice. So like I literally grew up on the east side and then just kind of moved around all over, whatever. So, but this is my first time like actually, I've traveled for singing, but actually living somewhere else by myself, is, you know, really different. So it's a learning experience. I've already met some really great people. It's actually not that different from Oklahoma or any other state, really. I travel back and forth to Dallas a lot through my career, whatever. And the conception is because, you know, Oklahoma is, you know, before the thunder, we were virtually unknown. I literally, when I used to work customer service, I got at least two or three calls where they would hear me and be like, so you're from Oklahoma? And I'd be like, yeah. They'd be like, there are black people there? And I'd be like, yeah, you know.
That's such the dumbest answer. Oh, my God. I hate when they ask me that. Like, yeah, they do. Like, what do you, like, I don't know why they think we just got, like horses and cows and chickens.
Like,
we just exist in a business. Like, yeah. We walk our chickens down on Bryan Avenue or something. Like, what?
Yeah, it's
destitute
crazy.
Or something.
But it's
oh my
really
God.
it's it's really not that different. It's just that the degrees of separation is smaller. But that, honestly, it means nothing. So, like, you know, you live in Oklahoma, you're probably maybe 7 or 8 degrees away from being close to somebody who can really change your career. In Dallas, you're probably 2 or 3, sometimes even 1 person away from being connected to somebody. Here, it's just like 2 or 1. But that connection is hard because everybody's on a come up. So nobody really right. wants to, like, run that risk of introducing you to somebody if it could mess up what they're working on. So it's all about a grind for yourself. And I'm okay with that. I'm learning and I'm growing. I'm never a person who just, you know, gets discouraged or gets upset when stuff don't go my way. It's just always, okay, all right, so what's the next plan? Okay, how we fix this? How we get the plan J? Because, you know, A through K didn't work out. So, you know, it's just, I'm chilling.
Yeah, because L.A.'s, it's hella small, not even just in the music world, but in the entertainment world. Like, we had one married couple, and they knew each other. One of them is, Royale Watkins, he was on, he's a comedian and a producer and all that stuff in Hollywood. Like, he's real, does some things in Hollywood. And then Angel, she's an actress, and they knew each other. Like, and I forgot all about that because I booked them both on at the same time, and they're both from, they work in L.A. Doing the entertainment industry. And I was like, yo, this is so weird, like, how small it is, like, because I contacted them both, and they knew each other. Like, they're real good friends. And I forgot all about that. I was like, so, yeah. I was going to ask, we were talking about the album. When we played the song, we were talking about that song. And, E.B., tell her what you thought of it.
No, I was saying that song, it gave me different vibes. I'm listening, and I'm getting, like, a little bit of Robert Glasper vibes, getting some Liz Bright. But your tone, your voice, is amazing.
Oh,
I can't get
you.
Enough of it. Like, I'd heard of you and I knew who you were. You had this one song, and I'm blanking on the name, but there was a Curtis Mayfield sample.
Try.
You sampled Try.
Yeah,
I listened to that song so many times. Love that song. It's something about your voice and the tone of it is so rich. Like, is that something that you've always been able to, you've had to be singing all of your life?
Well, yes. I am your atypical church girl. Grew up in church and singing to 3 in front of people, from 5 people to 5,000. My daddy did not care. If there was a church song that I could lead, that's what I was going to do. First of all, thank you so much for that. I'm so humbled by your words. I've always been the person. I was raised in the church, but I was raised with parents that refused to let the talent that I had overshadow my character. So,
right.
I was groomed, but I was consistently humbled. Like, nobody, like, I call my sister my keep it real girl, because at any time, like, if 5 people give me accolades, my sister would come and be like, you know, you did that 3rd run, I ain't really like that, you shouldn't do that no more. I'd just be like, alright, I mean, cool. So I actually used to hate the sound of my voice. I used to hate it recorded, which actually I feel like if you ask any vocalist, they'll tell you that there is a period where, like, they hate to hear themselves recorded. It actually took me a long time to even do the first EP. By the time Heart of Me released, for I was like almost 3 years old. And so it was, even writing that came out of frustration because I didn't want to write. I had finally worked up the courage to record, and then my musicians was like, well, you know, we got to create it ourselves. You know, you got to do it. Just, oh, well, I want to do it. Y'all write something, and I'll sing it. and nobody would do it, so I had to write it. And so I always try to push myself to do something, because I love tone. Like, in this day and age, especially for urban people, runs are, like, the biggest thing. Like, you know, if you could, you could hit minor and major keys or high, that's cute and all, you know what I'm saying? And sometimes it'll get me. But I love tone. I love tone.
Right.
Like, you know, like, I say canned tone and you know, of course, Jasmine Sullivan and, like, her. I love just good, solid tone. And so I consistently work on that, because coming up in church, you know, they want big vibrato and big sound.
Right.
And so home is something that I'm extremely proud of, because I had to really work not to get, my voice can get, you know, loud and bold and brash, and I had to really work in home to keep my tone really soft and subtle. And so I love that I was able to do that, and that you actually hear that when it comes to,
yeah, that was the first thing I noticed, was the tone of your voice on that song. A lot of people don't realize that's not something that's easy to do. Like you say, you had to work, because it's always easier, you know, to come out, you know, full voice and,
right,
you know, strong and loud. But when you, that takes a lot of control to do what you did with that song.
And to make sure that I hit those notes, because some of those notes were, like, you know, low. And so I didn't want to, you know, and I'm a person of, it took, and one of the, another reason why it took me a long time to record, because it was like, I don't want a lot of auto-correction on my throat. You're not going to sound for me. And then I get, you know, and then I get out there, and then I don't sound anything like the record that you love. So.
Right.
I had to make sure that, you know, I was giving 100% me as best as I could, and it just, it really delivered. It's one of my favorite songs. It's actually on, Jaylee, the producer, was the one who produced the album, and he just came out with a compilation CD called Music Box, and so he re-released Home on his album, and he put my favorite foreign instrument, which is trumpet. He put trumpets on it, and it's just, I'm mad. I was talking about, I was mad. I was like, why couldn't it be on my album? I was like, you know, I love trumpet. Why couldn't it be on my album? But it's still, like, and I love that it resonates so much, because that's what I wanted. When I wrote it, that's what I wanted. I wanted you to think about home. I wanted you to feel that comfort when you heard the song.
That song is hella vibrant. It's like, you can put that on anywhere. That's what I like about records. You can play at home, in the car, wherever, and you can actually play it at a kickback too. I'll try to pick that out. I'm gonna try to play that in a set or something, see what that sound like. Yeah, I was like, I listened to that, and it was the thing that, like, I'm really into, like, background singers and, like, live instrumentation when I write. Yeah, and I was sitting there listening to the harmonies was like what grabbed my attention. It was like, I was like, oh shit, this is everything real quick. And it was just like, did somebody stack those, or was it?
Those were my actual background fingers that I was using at the time.
Oh man, cause I could tell it was like, I was like, it sounds like these are different, but I was like, I wasn't sure if it was stacked vocals or it was actually different.
Yeah.
Cause I was like, them harmonies were everything.
Those were actually my background vocalists, Thaddeus Johnson, Tony Lee, and Rachel Williams. And Rachel Williams is the soft voice that you hear. That's Rachel. And what happened was that when we were, I was doing shows in the midst of finishing my album. So I would have vocal rehearsal, and we would split the time. We'd be like, okay, we're going to do vocal rehearsal for a little bit, and then we're going to write. So we would just be literally sitting in the middle of my mama's living room coming up. And I would always, I love collaboration. I just feel like one artist themselves is good, it's cool, but to collaborate and to get all of those creative juices flowing is so dope. So The first verse is all me, and the chorus is all me. And the second verse, Tony helped write a lot of the arrangements was Thaddeus and Rachel. And so it all just came together. Thaddeus Johnson is a new up-and-coming artist, and he has an amazing ear. And when we get together, it is ridiculous. So we actually wrote two songs on Jay Lee, the producer's album, and it wasn't even purposeful. We were just helping to collaborate with somebody else, and it's just like he does so much, and he hears so much all the time, and I feel like I help him stretch it out and make it more to where you can hear everything. But like, there would be times when we were in the studio for Home Alone, and when we were recording, he'd be like, okay, I hear another note. And so he'd go in, and like, there's like 5, 4, 5, 6 part harmony all throughout the song, because he would hear the 4th and 5th note and just want to do it, and it would sound so amazing. There was no way I could say, nah, we good. Like, I had to let him go ahead and do it.
And he's going to feature on that Ode to Music one, right? That live one?
Yes, the live version.
Oh, yeah. His voice is real, like, I can hear the church in his voice, but it's like, is he mostly just, has he always done R&B, or was it gospel as well?
No, he actually is just now venturing into more of a secular, even though I hate that word.
I tell you words I hate. It's secular, neo soul, and indie. Those are the three words I hate. Is this soul or whatever genre that is? Just say that. I hate when they put that extra on there. Subgenre.
Well, trap
soul is becoming another one. That's a whole other story, but go ahead.
I hate trap soul. Trap soul isn't real.
Unmusical. Robert Glasper said it's unmusical, so I'm going to say
it's
it as
not,
well. He's already
I
said
agree
it.
With you, sir. You know, neo soul is a hard one for me because we're getting so off. That's what creatives do. We have ADD, but neo soul is a hard one for me because I graduated high school in 2000, which is kind of like around the birth of the term neo soul, which was, I think, it was by Kadar Massenberg. He was the one because he had no other way to describe Erykah Badu.
I'm gonna tell you a story real quick. Maxwell, I actually just had a conversation with him earlier. And he was saying it was a post he made, and I was telling him, I was like, yo, the only reason why they were calling that neo soul then was during that climate was because at that time period, the mid-90s, it was completely gangster rap, like Death Row, Bad Boy, like the R&B, hip-hop, and so that was all was marketed, and so the only thing they brought back was the instrumentation, but that, I'm like, that's nothing new about that, because all they did was bring live instrumentation back, and that wasn't norm at the time. So
yeah,
and he
most
agreed.
Artists in that era, they hated.
Yeah,
they
Maxwell told me he hated
it.
Bilal, Marsha Ambrosia, all of them told me.
Erykah hates it.
Questlove, everybody hates it.
She was the start of it, but you know, I remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I was watching something, and it was like Music Soul Child and Angie Stone. It was like a whole bunch of soul artists, and she literally went off. She was like, "Don't call my music neo soul music. There's nothing new about this. Is just soul."
Nothing
and
new.
I was just like,
right.
"Yeah." And Bilal told me in an interview, he said, "If you say that to him, he's gonna cuss your ass out." He said the last person that said to him, he cussed them out. So don't y'all do that. Don't y'all go up on his call me neo soul, because he's gonna cuss you out if you tell that. But yeah, I'm going into a question. You gonna stay on the whole show, right? Because we got some more stuff to talk about before we go on the break.
Sure.
Whatchamacallit? I was gonna ask you in terms of your music ability. When was it? I know you said, what age do you say it was that you found your voice, that you were like, this is my tone, this is my range right here, and I'm comfortable with it?
You know, I don't think I've ever been, I've never, I started singing at 3. I would probably say around 10, between 10 and 12. But the thing is like I went to, it was hard for me because I went to a predominantly white school, growing up all the way up until probably like my freshman year. And, so whenever I would do music classes, I would do my natural tone and then I would go into my falsetto. And, my teachers would love my falsetto so much that they would immediately put me as a first soprano. And so whenever I was in school, I never got to sing in my natural voice. I would always sing first soprano, which was extremely frustrating for me because I didn't know anything about that. All I knew was church. And so, you know, I feel like at church I get to go and I get to sing like me. And then I have to come to school and I have to, you know, sing Green Sleeves in this high voice that I do not like. And so I would say that around 10 was when I actually, you know, really found my natural tone. But I didn't really develop or begin to develop what I had the ability to do until college. And that's actually when I started singing live music, the first band I ever had. I actually went to school in Oklahoma called Oklahoma Christian University, which I thought it was a Christian university.
Oh, okay.
It turned out to be a private school. That was something totally different. Went there for music and learned a lot of good lessons there, but it was the same thing because I had a conversation with my music teacher and I did the exact same thing. We started going through the scales. I go into my falsetto and they say, oh, okay, you have first soprano range. And I'm like, but that's not what I do. Like, I don't want to do that. And he had to explain to me, like, it's still growth in my range, like, using my head voice. It's still growth. And I ended up leaving there and going to UCO. And I was with the gospel choir under Philip Thomas. And that really expanded what I did not know I could do. And between that and then I ended up starting a band my second year there. Well, I joined the band my second year there. And it kind of capsized from there. And I don't believe anybody truly knows themselves or knows. You learn as you go. And because we're humans and humans evolve, you can never be, you stifle yourself if you're set in one way. If you say, okay, this is what I do, this is who I am, and then you just decide to be that the rest of your life, you kind of set boundaries for yourself. So I know that my natural tone is a mezzo alto, means I can go into like second soprano naturally, but I feel like the way God made our bodies, I could do whatever I want to do.
Sounds good to me. I know you be holding it down for the altos. I feel like that's like the most disrespected thing.
We
is the altos.
We don't get the respect we deserve. They don't understand. And I just had a team that altos always had a melody. So
they be high for the soprano part. The alto always had the range. Always the melody.
We are holding you down. Without us, you just sound like screeching owls. Like, no. You're not
right, exactly.
I won't have it. My crew goes strong. Any alto section, I'm in. We killing it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. We talked a little bit about your, I know you've done background for a lot of people. Background vocals, and we had a legend on last week, Karen White, and she was talking about how she loves giving background singers shine and all that stuff. We had like a whole conversation we was breaking down with her about I got her into my tangent about musicians or singers. I think I got her in trouble a little bit because I get on this little tangent a little bit, and I like getting musicians versus singers on so I can kind of rev it up a little bit. That's why I was kind of hoping Jamar stayed on the whole show so I can get this musician versus singer thing going on. But we're gonna play that another time.
Me and Jamar had that conversation 3,000 times.
But yeah, I want to know who did, you can name all the people you background for if you want to, like all the different, singers.
It's been a lot of gospel artists. you know, LaShawn Mitchell, Karen Clark Shear, Marvin Sapp. And then I've done a lot of soul artists. I've done in Don B, Case, Dr. Bars, Sunshine Anderson. It's been a lot of people. I love background vocals. It's actually a low-key dream job of mine. Not really low-key, but it is a dream job of mine because I love music. It's not always about being in the limelight as much as it is just about being a part of music. And vocals,
right.
Background vocals are such a key part of music. Mm-hmm. And if I can do my part to make sure that this sound is the best sound possible, I am happy. If you want to shout me a little, give me a little shout out, give me a little 16 count, so I can do my third sizzle, that's great. But if all I'm doing to collect the check is do these background vocals, it's the best thing ever. I think in Dombey I'm not going to say peculiar, but it was just unconventional. That's a good word. Thank you, Lord. Because I had, through doing promotions, I came in contact with her manager, and the radio station in Oklahoma City, they have a lot of other affiliations, like in Atlanta and a whole lot of other places. And the through them, they ended up bringing in Dombey down, which is, for Oklahoma, it's not necessarily normal. Now, you would think that because it's so close to Dallas, you know, we would know who she is. But Oklahoma, for a long time, tried to be a Dirty South hip-hop. So... They had identity issues, but it was hard to, like, you know, get them to understand who soul artists were and things like that. So long story short, she had been calling me. We've been talking, and she was like, you know, we decided we were going to do a live band. She called me, and she wanted some musicians. So I gave her, you know, the best musicians for what she needed. And then she called me back, and she said, okay, well, radio station said they got musicians. I said, okay. And so then she quizzed me about who these musicians were, and so I told her. So I was like, well, you know, we could do background vocals for you, too. Like, I have the best, I know who to get. And she was like, I don't know. She was like, because Ndombe is really particular about her background vocals. So long story short, we had to submit a video singing her songs because of her dialect and her diction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, another artist, Nita Frui, and, another artist who was one of my background singers at the time, Anisha, we did a compilation video. It's actually still on YouTube. It's so hilarious. We did a compilation video, just a snippet of her songs, and, her manager, Monica, called me right back and was like, she loves it. Y'all look like y'all having so much fun. And it was just like, okay, do we got the job? It was like, yeah, you know, don't even worry about it. So it was just like, I'd never done that. Most of the time, even like when Kids with the Family Soul came, I didn't even get a chance to rehearse with them. They almost weren't even going to use me because the powers that be didn't give the information correctly. So I'm sitting there in sound check the entire time and nobody has said anything. And so then finally, you know, the wife comes and she's like, you know, so who are you? And I introduce and I tell her what I'm supposed to do. And she's like, oh, well, they didn't say anything. And long story short, because I knew the music, I still ended up doing background. It was literally by the seat of my knowledge. Like, because
right.
The whole time that they rehearsed, I didn't do anything. I literally said, like, nobody checked my levels, and I ended up doing it in Oklahoma City and in Tulsa, but, like, it was because I studied the music, but I still loved it. I still had an amazing time. Everything is about, it's just so important to know what you're doing, and the only way that works is if you take what you're doing seriously. And I feel like sometimes a lot of artists out here, they do it because they can, but not because you actually respect the craft.
Oh man, absolutely, 100%. And then people added on to that. A lot of them don't even. Oh my God, it's like to me, I feel like in terms of like really like trying to make money from the industry. The mm-hmm. way, yes, the industry has shifted, but it ain't shifted that much to where you can't make it. Mostly the bread, when it, the way you make the most is touring, and a lot of them have the chops and they don't have the discipline to, like, that's where the money is. Like, why do you
right.
think so many of these older artists, like, that's, like, they may or may
that's
not drop a single, or, and they can still bank off of, like, doing promotion for a tour just off of that single alone, but yeah, and doing big stuff. You basically, if you got like a good, not even PR, because that's just if you're trying to get on like TV or something like that. If you're trying to
right.
do something in that realm, that's the only purpose. But mostly, if you got a good looking agent or management man, and not only just getting them, but because I just had a conversation with an artist not too long ago this week, and I was like, yo, you got to research the people that you putting on your team. Like you can't just get them just because. Like you got to see. Not only are they trying to, you both were pretty much like interviewing each other because they want to
right.
know what are you doing, and then you got to see what they're doing and what specifically you trying to get. And like, I feel like a lot of them don't have any kind of business goals to what they want to achieve, and they just go out there thinking talented. Like it's the reason why it's called the music business. Like you gotta put 100% in the business as much as
right.
the music. Like it's not just music, but
it's the research, it's the time it takes. Right.
right.
And you gotta,
right.
you see all the glitz and glamour, like you'll watch a Beyonce video and see, you know, her dancers and know that she had this band and see how she performs and all these people screaming and you're like, yeah, that's what I wanna do. Not realizing, like, first of all, that's not easy to do every night for 50 nights back to back. Even if you listen to her voice now from when she first started, we're not even talking about Destiny's Child. We're just talking about Dangerously in Love. Her tone is completely different. And it's different
mm-hmm.
because she has sang so hard for so long that it altered the way that her vocal cords heal and work.
Yep.
And you can't just sit up here and do anything and think that it's going to be okay. It baffles my mind when I see vocalists who smoke. Like, I'm looking at them like,
yeah.
So you really want to be on this major blast come back like that? Like, you just... I do not understand. Like, you are damaging something that you really legit want to make money from. Like,
yeah.
I have asthma, so I couldn't smoke anyway, but it's just... It's just you gotta take what you're doing seriously. You gotta soak it up. I've told my singers this, I tell everybody this. At the end of the day, regardless of talent, the two things that you have that if you ruin, you will never get back is your character and your work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
If you do not keep those on point and ever growing, it don't matter how good you are. Ain't nobody gonna work with you.
Speak that truth. That is 100% factual. And I'm a musician,
right.
and I know that goes either way for a musician. Like, whatever you're trying to do,
mm-hmm.
like, you, and that's what I think a lot of them build it on, like, they think the talent, like, no, you gotta be likable. And that's what I wrote an article, I think last year it was called Why It's Okay for Non-Black Artists to do soul music. And it was basically, I wrote it because at the time, K. Michelle, and Tyrese had made like some, I thought it was outrageous statements when they said, cause Tyrese's album did good on the charts, on the R&B charts, but he was like, oh, it would be better if Robin Thicke did it. And I was like, no, because
no.
until that Blurred Lines, that was the only pop hit he had. Cause he did a number one on R&B, I think with Lost Without You, but he was always considered so R&B and he never got like
the
accolades until that. Yeah.
When he had long
yeah,
hair
exactly.
driving a bicycle up and down New York, I knew who Robin Thicke
was. Right.
Right.
And I'm like, that's flawed logic. And I'm like, you're just throwing it out
wow.
there. Cause and at the time, Adele had sold, like, you know, that last album, 25. I'm like, that's because it's mostly the social media. When your stuff is popping online on Twitter or on, if you got everybody on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook talking about your album, it's going to be a hit album. Just like with,
yeah.
The Jhené Aiko, I know for me, it's not my taste, and not my, I don't really care for it, but I know a lot of people like it. And I'm being honest as a music critic. I got that license to say that. That's not my taste. But I know
I
that album is popular
on the
charts.
I had a conversation with a coworker about that very album today. And the thing is, like, I followed Janae Aiko. Like, when she was just doing mixtapes and she had no deal, and this was before Sean, and this was before all of that, and she was just doing mixtapes. I like her. I think she's cool. I just happen to like artists who have a little bit more range. And I no say. You out here, you doing it.
Okay, this is where the heathen part of the show comes in, Cookie. I'm gonna preface this by saying this doesn't reflect nothing of Cookie Turner's brand. I just want to say this before I go in real quick. This doesn't reflect any of her brand. But that shit is Sleepy Time music. I can't get with that. Like that. Like I feel like if I need an Ambien or some sleep aids. You know, I feel like that's the antidote to that. Like, I feel like her music, like, it's sleepy time, like, music. Like, okay, cool. Like, I could go to sleep to this. Like, some soundscape, like, style type of music. If I want to listen to that, maybe I'll go there. But I'm still holding a little bit of hostility towards her brand or whatever it is she does. Because last year or whatever year that she put out her last album, they were saying that was the best solo album of the year. I was like, I'm about to have a stroke or something, because are you serious? Like, you're talking about people like Avery Sunshine, Layla Hathaway dropped great albums. Like, I can list more than 20 great R&B and soul albums that came out. And you
that
think
was not,
she's
that
the
was
president? This shit didn't even get nominated for a Grammy. Like, all that stuff
that
gets played on BET. Like, in terms of mainstream, like, trap show, that's why I understand why BET. And I went at BET in an article, too, because I'm like, y'all got to do better with promoting soul artists. Like, these people got albums to promote, too. And well, I had a conversation with Karen White, and I was saying, I'm like, all this music industry stuff makes sense. I'm like, since the 70s, the 80s, going into Motown and then going to the 80s, they've always, record label heads have always tried to market people that they try to pick and choose who can be in pop music. They'll take an R&B artist like Whitney Houston and say, oh, you pop or whatever, so you can't do, and anybody black that does R&B soul, you just that. And back in the day, I said that 70s, 80s, the reason why that music was so big because they were not just marketed in R&B and soul, they were marketed in pop music too. And the reason why you see the difference in the mainstream numbers in the sales is because they stopped putting that music in the pop chart. I'm telling you right now, if you put Legacy album right now that she put out, you put that shit in the pop charts and let that market that shit in there, that shit is gonna sell just like with everybody else.
If you market it as pop, then that's exactly what it was gonna be.
That's why it's not selling, because the difference, the reason why it's and I feel like it's coming back, but I think it's the marketing. Quit putting these subgenres in there saying trap soul. If you're gonna do that, don't try to dictate what this subgenre is. Just put it in R&B. If this is a pop album, put it in a pop category. Don't create subgenres that don't have marketing for it.
The thing that gets me is like it's that song came from Bryson Tiller's album. Like that was it. Like he put out an album called The Trap Soul, and then all of a sudden people had a name to go with. Just stuff that felt good. The industry is so bent on pigeonholing everything because it makes it easier for them to market. So, it's a disrespect. Like I was listening to Hank's interview on The Breakfast Club today, and he was actually saying how R&B doesn't stream well. And
that's a lot because Faith's album like got over 20 million. He's a lot because I know a bunch of them that got over like millions of streams.
Which album?
In terms of I guess that would be more hip hop. The one with the Biggie joint.
See, that's
the
what
King
I,
and
that's
I
what
one
I mean.
Stream
like,
well.
In comparison to other genres, that it doesn't stream well. And I have to be inclined to believe it because then we still have artists that are being congratulated on hitting like a million streams. Like, Letticy's high single just hit, like, I think, like, maybe 2 million streams. And that was the first time that she had did anything like that. But literally, like, to go gold the way Cardi B did, you got to hit, like, 100 million. Or the top of the Billboard, you got to hit, like, 100 million. And that's no easy feat. That's not easy to do. And you can't count people like Rihanna, because Rihanna's considered pop. And because of that, it's like, it's just literally like a revolving circle. Because they don't get high streams, then that means that the record label tries to push the R&B and soul artists into more of a pop area, because that's the only way that they're going to make money. And it didn't used to be that way. But in the age of technology, it's the way that it went, and it's also why a lot of artists choose to go independent. One of the artists that I love the most is Eric Roberson, because he actually had the opportunity to continuously get a record deal, and he opted not to, seeing how it was. And I believe he is one of, if not the biggest selling independent artist in R&B. Or soul, or whatever you want to call it. I just call it good music.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's all the same. Like, all these different subgenres, I think that's what's confusing. But, yeah, we're going to go to break, because we still got some more to talk about. Evie, you had a topic, because I was just going to talk. We were going to talk about music all.
We're going to talk music. We're talking music tonight.
Okay. Well,
this is a Soul Saturday show, and we're going to talk soul music.
Absolutely. And what we're going to do, we're going to go to break real quick. I guess we could try to, I'm going to try to mix this in, talk about fan culture and marketing, how that affects the industry. So y'all check out this song right here.
The hand that wrote this letter sweeps the pillow clean. So rest your head and read a treasure dream. I care for no one else but you. I tear my soul to cease the pain. I think maybe you feel the same. What can we do? I'm not sure what we're supposed to do. So I've been writing just for you. They say your life is going very well. They say you sparkle like a different girl. But something tells me that you hide when all the world is warm and tired. You cry a little in the dark, or so do I. I'm not quite sure what you're supposed to say, but I can see it's not okay. He makes you laugh, he brings you out in style. He treats you well, he makes you look real fine. And when he's strong for you. And when you kiss, this is something new. But did you ever call my name just by mistake? I'm not quite sure what we're supposed to do. So I just write some love.
real good. Robert Glasper. Letter to Hermione featuring Belong. Hey, welcome back. This is the Soul Savage Show with your host, E.B. and Q-Lynn Green and special guest, singer-songwriter Cookie Turner. Welcome.
Yeah, that's the joint right there. I love how Robert Glasper, like, captures the space in songs. And I love, like, how he mixes, like, David Bowie. Like, his taste in music is, like, all over, but yet he finds some way in, like, jazz to, like, make that come together. It's so dope. Like,
that is, like, literally, that's one of my favorite songs off of that album.
Oh my God, he captured like that cover. Yeah, I can listen to that all day.
I love that David Bowie cover. That Letter to Hermione is
it's amazing. It's amazing.
I actually heard a song today that like you ever hear music so good? If somebody was to walk past you while you was listening to it, they think you was going into convulsions.
Yep.
Oh man, I do that all the time. Like, I just got to, like, somebody, like, just did gas or something. I just have that face all the time when I listen to music. It's like, and then I just be cussing and all that stuff. They're like, what's wrong with her? You got Tourette's or something.
It was so good.
Oh man. Yeah, man, I was gonna talk about, first off, before we get to all this, cause I know when we get start talking about it, we gonna get, all the way to the end of the show. Well, I wanna know, since we started, like, can we get an extra, I know you gotta do the Braxton's Back Show after this, but can we get an extra 15 minutes so we can play the game with Cookie?
Sure, no problem at all.
Okay, I ain't wanna throw no shade out there, but I'm just saying, we started a little bit late.
As long as you keep it civil.
Oh, we keeping it civil.
Oh, we're keeping it civil.
No,
he's talking to me.
I am talking to Q-Lynn Green.
Cookie, he's saying that because the last show, because I actually behaved myself last show because we had Legend on. The week before, we had a big catastrophe. We did a part two of MJ versus Prince debate. That's what he's referring to. Because I went absolutely insane because he says blasphemous things that we're not going to mention on the show because he's going to go into a tangent. I'll get to it probably when we get to the game. But, yeah, I went on a tangent. I was Team Prince. He's Team Michael. And he does disrespectful stuff like saying things like he can't sing. So it kind of drew me crazy. So
disrespectful stuff.
And so that's what he's referring to because I completely lost my. But, yeah, we gonna skip all that disrespect. That disrespectful energy. And get to the topic talking about, I guess we
Right. Hey, Cookie, may I say something?
Yes.
No, this was exclusively and privately for Q-Lynn. She's the rebel of the entire station. You have to understand that. You know? And I'm not, and I haven't signed off, nor am I responsible for her language or content most times.
Oh, wow.
Right, EB?
Cookie, I actually want to throw in that we have a producer on the show that drinks, so, since he wants to throw that out there. I thought he liked the connotation of Pinot Grigio, and so we had a legend on, so he was like, I'm glad this, he was like, I'm glad this interview is over with so I can finish my drink. He's paying attention now. He's like, man, I want to get to this drink. I can't wait till this other show come on so I can get some of my Pinot Grigio. Or last week he was drinking Moscato. That's what he said on the air. He just tells on himself on top. But we'll digress so we can move on to the topic. Okay.
Speaking of shade, that was a complete blackout.
Oh my goodness.
You called it, so blame it on yourself. Okay, we gonna get back to the topic. Okay, talk about music. Fan, I feel like fan culture is the one of the main reasons why it doesn't sell anymore. Because when you look at it, everybody knows the fan names. The fact I know this, I don't even pay attention like that, and I know all the fan names. Like Beyonce, we all know the Beehive. Rihanna's
right.
The Navy. Madonna,
right.
You know, Mariah Carey got the Lambs. Yeah, she calls her fans Lamb. I don't know why I know that, Lamb. So, all these it's just when you look on the internet, it's like every time they drop an album, it's like, they feel like this album is way more important than this album. You know, you see them on there, like, they right. always have to compare. Like, you can't just, because that's what I loved about back in the day, like, all these, like, artists, like, going from the 80s, 90s, like, 80s, you had, like, R&B, I guess, Regina Bell, Angela Winbush, you had, Karen White, you had, Jolie White, like, all these different artists had different styles, and everybody, mm-hmm. you would buy all that music. Going to the mm-hmm. 90s, Monica Brandy, Faith Evans, Tamia, Kelly Price, all these different artists, even the groups, like, Escape, Brownstone, TLC, like, yeah, nobody mm-hmm. had, nobody was like, oh, I'm team SWV versus, you know, In Vogue. It's like, you bought everybody's album. And so, right. I feel like right. these new set of fans, like, that's what they do. And they all sell. And people, that's the conflicting thing about, okay, what sells and what doesn't. The reason why Adele can sell, the reason why Beyonce can sell, is because they have a huge fan base within that. Like, they can all go platinum with that, but I wish that all their energy would go to the next artist. And I feel like it's room for everybody, but everybody makes it like it's a Game of Thrones sport. And also with marketing, like I said, if they would market, like, I'm telling you, it would be more increase in sales with everybody if they put R&B back on pop charts and marketed that way. But a lot of them do their own independent thing, and so I don't see, they're just all categorized in urban AC, and I hate that. And it's so weird, because it's just that section. I feel like all that music you can play it everywhere. But yeah, what do y'all think? Whoever wants to go first, I don't care. Go. What do you think about that?
Go ahead, Miss Cookie.
It's systematic. I believe probably, I would say late 90s, they, you know, started putting stuff in a wheel machine. I would even dare to say, because it's the first thing that comes to my mind, probably starting with, like, Backstreet Boys versus NSYNC.
Right.
It became, like, a competition. So it was like, yeah, they're two different, but, you know, they're following the same, they came out of the same machine, you know what I'm saying? So right. it was, and they used that gimmick to generate sales. And because that gimmick worked, at least for NSYNC, well, I choose to believe NSYNC won because overall they have more talent, but that's just because I was
yeah.
not just Justin, yeah. but like, all around,
they had more talent. The only good singer in Backstreet and Backstreet Boys was AJ. And if he didn't have him, and that's when he got the news. Okay, go ahead. I'm acting crazy. Right. Go ahead.
Okay. So, go ahead. Like, the thing is like, I'm not anti-industry. I'm just anti-industry gimmicks. So, for me, it's a little hard to talk about because I do my best to steer away from that. At the same time, I'm still extremely excited when I see people that I follow for a long time actually get their just due, but I know how the game works. So it's just a little bit harder because it's all about, you know, people, the generation that we live in, this millennial generation, everybody's a follower. Nobody's independent. Like, nobody, I remember when Rihanna first came out, I swore up and down. I thought it was Solange. Let me explain. when Time to Replay first came out, it sounded to me like, this was like during the time when Solange still had like braids. I think her first solo album was like Solo Star or something like that.
Yeah.
It sounded like one of the singles that she had. And so I was like, oh, okay, she went Caribbean with it. Cool. I had no idea who Rihanna was. And then from Umbrella, she just kind of like blew up. And the oxymoron about fan culture is that they follow these people because they're an individual. Like, Rihanna does whatever she wants to do and could care less about what anybody thinks. She got her butt kicked one time and was like, bump this, I'm no longer being in anybody's wheelhouse. The way she does her albums, the way she presents herself, the way she travels, Fendi Beauty, Fendi Poop, all of her stuff is individual. Beyonce's the same way. Mariah Carey was in her own lane. Lady Gaga, even though she started off as a gimmick, she still pulls stuff out of the box. All of these people are individuals and are nothing like the other person. But because it's such a following, such a sheep mentality that the millennials have, they gravitate. It's such an oxymoron that you gravitate to this individuality, but you can't get any individuality of your own.
Right. What do you think, EB?
I'm gonna agree with a lot of what Ms. Cookie said. It's going back to the whole thing about gimmicks. And I talk about this a lot sometimes. I think everybody has a gimmick. I think everybody to get put on has to be some sort of gimmick. There's not an artist you can name, and I can't pinpoint exactly what their gimmick is. I think where stan culture plays a part in that is it's slowly but surely taking the artistry out of music.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Back in the day, the competition used to be between artists themselves. You know, if you were, I'm going to take it way back, you know, if you were on the Motown bus, you know, you might be competing with the Temptations or the Supremes to see who can get that number one, to see who can get that first gold record, to see who can open and who can headline a tour. It was
right.
A friendly competition between artists. What stan culture has done is take that friendly competition where label mates are pushing each other, or even people on different labels are pushing each other to kind of expand the limits of their artistry. Stan culture mm-hmm. has taken that, and it's built these competitions not around the artistry, but around the persona of the artist, not the actual art that
the
they're
actual
creating.
Art, yeah.
Right. It's not about the music anymore for a lot of people. There are so many of today's artists, like you said, Rihanna, she does her own thing, but she has this culture of followers, of stans, who don't realize that they're doing the exact opposite of what she's doing. She's living her life and
right.
not caring what anybody thinks. I always say that Rihanna is, in terms of social media and, well, no, not in terms of social media, but in terms of her doing what she wants and not caring, she is another version of Mary J. Blige. In the 90s, Mary was that one who did whatever she wanted, whenever
mm-hmm.
she wanted, wore what she wanted, said what she wanted in interviews, and she didn't care. The thing is, social media has brought the ugly out of a lot of people, because they don't even realize they're fighting over these personas. They're not fighting over, like, a lot of them I really don't think are appreciating the music. They're listening to the music, but there's no appreciation for it.
Oh no, but you can't appreciate it. It's recycled.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly.
The only person that comes out with something. Words. Okay, so disclaimer. This is in no way, do not let anybody who is a bee, a bumblebee, a hornet, I don't want anybody coming after me.
They can come after me. They can come after me. Y'all
they
see
can
me outside.
But let me first
right.
say, I applaud Beyonce as an artist. I applaud her for if nothing else, her innovation, because in a culture and in a climate where everything is recycled, she still finds ways to be all the way outside the box, and you never see it coming. Like nobody else could do what she does. With that being said, I would be remiss if I didn't say musically, there are people that are ridiculously more talented.
Right.
Not in a negative way, but
right.
There are people that could play instruments and sing and give you stage presence that would, like, that she worships, that she likes, that Beyonce has said, people who she has looked up to, these people are still out here hustling and trying to get their music. And it's not even, when it comes to mainstream, it's not even about the music anymore. It's about
right.
the popularity. It's about the notoriety. Nobody,
yeah, that's it.
I'm hard-pressed to think that anybody actually goes into the studio or has a writing session that's like, oh, wow, you know, this music really means something to me. It can really change somebody's life. It can really help uplift. Not to say that it doesn't, but I just don't. I have a hard time seeing it. I remember when Single Ladies came out, I don't remember who said it. I'm not going to say Beyonce said it, but I don't remember who said it per verbatim. But I remember somebody saying the fact of that it was going to – it. No, it was Beyonce. She was in the market of making timeless classics. That's what she said. And she said that she wanted Single Ladies to be a timeless classic. And I said, legitimately, at the time, I thought that was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard in my life. I was no way Single Ladies is going to be a timeless classic. But in this day and age, it is.
I mean, see a lot of people out there dance to it out there. I think pigeonhole her as just the dance. Like, I feel like hopefully with this next album she puts out, I see it with the visual. Like I told Evie a while back, I forgot what show it was. I said that Lemonade, the way she gave it to us, I can respect it conceptually. The way she gave it to us was visually. Through HBO, and so I'm looking at
the
album.
But the thing is, she's been doing that for the last two
Yeah,
albums.
Yeah.
Beyonce was completely visual.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying is that in terms of visually, I get it. I feel like she's more comfortable expressing it visually than lyrically. And I feel like with the next album, I feel like she needs what she's conceptually trying to do visually. She needs to put that into the album. Because, again, people got mad at me when I said it was around the show we did, the Grammys, we were reviewing it. I mean, I was saying my thoughts on it, and a lot of people were mad because she got snubbed for Album of the Year. And I'm like, okay, this is where I give Academy Awards. Yes, they're becoming more diverse in certain genres in the awards, but when it comes down to that, those top ones, like Album of the Year, Record of the Year, those are completely, like, political. Like, you have to, in terms of what Lemonade was, conceptually, visually, it was great. But when you look at it just for the album purposes, it's not really a great album. And if you don't have the visual, right, but I'm saying that without the visual attached to it, the album by itself isn't that great. And the visual of it tells a story. But they got mad at me because I said that. I'm like, that's why the Grammys didn't pick it, because if you just look at the album for what it is, just by itself, it doesn't, you can't get the concept of the album. That's why I understood why it didn't win over Adele's album. Even though Adele, she knew what it was visually, but that's just visual. That's why I'm saying that they're probably going to change it coming next year in terms of what's in that. Like, what do you make of a visual? Because visually, I know she's not the first person to do that, but in this day and time, she's kind of the first person to do that, so she might be changing barriers in that way in terms of visually,
right.
Like accepting visual albums, but I can understand why it didn't win, because if you look at Lemonade by itself, it's not a great album. But I hope the next album she makes, she puts all of those make lyrically content albums. I hope she does that more than, because she does that for the fans, because they love it, but yeah, go ahead.
See, I wouldn't say that her album wasn't a great album, because, I mean, she did in concept cross genre. She had country, she had rock.
Yeah.
You know, all these things on there or whatever. But I feel like you have to understand that when you start doing things out of the box, even though your fans and outsider are going to love it, it's still, like you said, it's still a business, and if people can't conceptually wrap their head around it, you know, nobody's gonna give you something based because your fans love it. Like, it just doesn't work like that. I think that she had a solid album, but...
Right, I'm not saying that the album by itself wasn't, I'm saying that I can't listen to that album without looking at the video. That's what I'm saying. She made it to where you can't listen to the song without looking at the video. And I'm saying when you just listen to it by itself, the album doesn't make sense. You don't get that, because the way she broke it up in the video, she talks about feelings and these, I forgot the 8 words she used to break it apart, but conceptually that was amazing. But when you just listen to the album, you don't understand the concept of that. Because you're hearing her go from country to rock to blues or whatever, but that doesn't make sense. The visual makes it, the album in totality makes sense. But yeah, I don't want none of the fans, the Beehive, don't say I don't like the album. I love that album. I'm saying that by itself, it doesn't make sense. I guess that's a better way of saying it. It doesn't make sense by itself.
Let me say this.
Go ahead.
Let me say this.
EB X's her pictures out on the internet, so everything he says is anti-Beyonce.
I'm gonna keep it 100. We're gonna do a whole show on this because gonna say this. Like you said, I haven't listened to the Sour Water album. I haven't listened to it or watched it or whatever the kids do these days. Like you said, Kulin, you can't listen to it without the accompanying visuals. That is on purpose. That is the plan for her team. I don't think Beyonce is a great artist. I don't think she's innovative or out of the box. What she has excelled at, though, is mastering social media, mastering her team is great, mastering the art of studying the culture and the climate so that she can market her albums or her sound or whatever she got going on to that particular brand of people. Like we were talking about stan culture, she markets her product to stan culture. In terms of her thinking out the box, she doesn't. She takes what she does. She studies. She studies.
The way you said it right. You're saying it right, but the way you said it made me laugh.
Listen, I mean, she studies. So she studied all of the greats. She studied people. Man. She studies people who are currently, like you said, people that she looks up to, and they're grinding. And she takes different aspects. She takes this part.
Yeah.
She takes this
part.
She molds them together, right, into this perfect package. Now,
because
the music we're getting.
Nobody else can do that.
Nobody else can do it. You are absolutely right. The music that we're getting from her, and especially with this latest Sour Water album and everybody's, you know, oh, my God, you know, she let us into her life. No, she didn't. She never will. That's. What it is about Beyonce. What she does, though, is she plays on, you know, what you have going on, what you're discussing on social media or the insecurities that you may have, and that is how she markets her music. She knows that people want to be let into her life, so it's like, oh, well, we're going to write this album like I'm going to really tell my business, like I'm going through marital problems for real.
God.
Believe that if y'all want to. It's all marketing.
So
it is all a gimmick.
Her and Jay-Z concocted this lie, is what you're saying.
I don't want to confirm it.
Of course.
He said. You're going to get all the emails. I just want to let you know that. You're going to get all the emails.
But this is the thing. It's not a complete lie, but what she does.
It's not.
Like, okay, so we're going to do like this. All of a sudden, Beyonce is a feminist icon.
Oh,
right?
God, don't do that.
You're like tripping on different
levels. I'm just saying, she's a feminist icon. But she becomes this feminist icon after feminism is the topic of discussion everywhere. Everybody wants to be into feminism. Everybody wants to study feminism and the feminist culture and all this other stuff. So it's like, okay, I know where exactly to hit so that I am successful at what I'm doing. I'm going to say... in terms of being business savvy, she's A plus. She's surpassed almost. I wouldn't say she's surpassed. She's almost surpassed Michael Jackson in that aspect. Because
I honestly, and dare I say it, I honestly think. Mm. And this is why. What I think the only thing that held Michael Jackson back was scandal. He could never
right.
do. He did a lot, and he was beloved, and he was amazing in his craft. But he couldn't escape scandal. He could not.
But I'm gonna tell you why. I'm gonna tell you why he couldn't, and Beyonce can, because.
She's ahead of it.
She's ahead of the scandal. Her team has been put into place to make sure that she is on top of what is going on culturally, socially, musically. So where Michael Jackson came along and, you know, everybody loves Mike, but oh my God, Beyonce pulls from, well, I'm going to just do what I want to do now, and it's always shock value. Like you said, you know, it's like she's out the box, like you never see it coming. That's the plan, for it to always be shock value. So when something hits, it doesn't hit as hard in a negative way. It's always like, yo, did you see what she did? Oh my God, the queen is singing in Spanish. Cut all that shit out.
On that note, we're going to wrap up this show real quick. I know, Will, we got 10 more minutes, right? You said, because we want to play the game real quick. You said we got 10 more extra minutes, right?
10 more minutes.
Okay, 10 minutes. Okay, we got this. Okay. Yeah, we ended on E.B. going, he's been waiting for one show to express himself about Beyonce. I'm so glad he got this off his chest, this show.
We're going to wrap this up.
He has more. So, yeah. He does disrespectful stuff, like it'll be like Mary J. Blige's birthday. He'd be like, happy birthday. He'll literally find a picture with her on it just to X her out of it and say, happy birthday, Mary J. Blige. Like, just completely ridiculous.
So you like to be in your petty bag a lot. You know what I wonder?
That's cool.
I wonder what album did you begin this
You know what? Honestly, It was the Destiny Child album.
The writing's
on the wall. Yeah.
You know what? I didn't start liking her until the 4 album, to be honest.
I love the writing on the wall.
I love the writing on the wall. I like Dangerously in Love. And I love Dangerously
in Love. Don't get me wrong. She has a lot of stuff I do like. That song, Kitty Cat. Her best song, like, that song goes
her best
hard.
Song. No.
That's
her
best
song.
Her
best song is Love on Top. That's her best song.
No. You know why Kitty Cat is her best song? Kitty Cat is her best song because Kitty Cat was the closest we are going to get to
the real Beyonce.
Right. It's Houston. It's gritty, but it's soulful and it's beautiful. That's the closest we're going to get. Like songs like Kitty Cat.
I would say Love. The only reason I wouldn't say Love on Top is her best song was because it's recycled. The sound is recycled. She just, like,
yeah,
I heard it now.
Yeah, yes,
it's absolutely New Edition Telephone Man all day. That's the
that's
first
the
thing
first thing
I thought
I
of when I heard it.
That's
but
heard.
The way that song is like perfect. And I'm like, that's her, in terms of like best written song, best vocal performance. Like, she went up 3 things. Like, that's when I started, I started believing her vocal ability because she changed, like, 3 different keys in that song.
Oh, no.
Crazy.
She's
I don't believe her vocal ability when she fell, when she hit the at that BET Awards, when she did Crazy in Love. Listen.
Yeah,
let me explain something, okay? You can hear breathing patterns. You know when somebody is doing something live, and when they have a track, and I heard her breath drop when she hit the floor, and then she sung as she scooted backwards. I was just like, I said, okay, all right, whatever I feel about it, it don't matter. I'm okay.
It was just her vocal placement. I felt like she was just always all over the place. I'm like, why are you always adding extra notes in there? Like,
oh no, in the beginning, like, if you listen to her in the beginning, them runs was, Jesus have mercy on my soul. I was like,
one song came on the car, my phone was dying, I listened to the radio, and it was a song called, I'm like, who is this doing a bad Beyonce impression? And then the radio host came up, she's like, that was Destiny Child. I was like, oh man, she is definitely upgrade, cause it was, runs are terrible. But we got like 7 minutes left. We're going to play this game real quick before we run time. And then Will hit us with that Emmy music again. Disrespectful. I can't believe he did that one show. We were talking and he going to play the wrapped up music on us. Disrespectful. But we don't get to the yes. What's wrong with you game.
I did. Hey, Cookie Turner.
Yeah.
Hey, great, great conversation. But I have to warn you, this game is rigged.
No, it's not rigged.
I knew it was coming.
I played the game. I made up the game. It's called What's Wrong With You Game. And I actually played it one show. EB threw out some good ones. I'm going to see if he can throw out one. But I'm going to play this list real quick. And we're going to hurry up and run through this. And Will, you better not try. I'm trying to find the mute button right now. Because if you come in saying that, you're getting on mute. So What's Wrong With You Game is pretty much an either or game. It's not vocal comparison. It's just completely on music catalog. So we're going to get it started because we run out of time. Okay, first one is Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass?
Marvin Gaye.
There we go, you're talking right. Next one, OJ's or The Whispers?
Ooh, oh, God. I was the Whispers. They're better writers.
Talking right. That's the thing with this game. I make up the rules as I go. So that was a trick question.
I told you it was rigged.
It's not bonus either way. No, it's not rigged. This is a great game. You go either or on that one, so it's a bonus. Okay, the next one, we're going to get to Prince or Rick James?
Prince.
There we go. That's another trick question. You go either or on that one. Then this is where we start cooking right here. It's always the easy ones. When we get to the hard ones, this is where it gets tricky. We start cooking. Okay, this one is causing a very disturbance in the black community. It's very split decision, but I'm going to say it anyway. Okay, we're going to go with Miss Aretha or Patty.
I believe in you, Miss Cookie.
I
believe in you.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
You like good songwriting. You like musicians. Come on.
Stop it, EB, trying to influence.
Which one you say?
I said
Aretha.
Oh, my God.
Hallelujah.
I feel like we're going to discount that one just for the record because I feel like EB was feeding you the answer.
I told you it was rigged.
Are you trying to do it? No, it's not rigged. We're going.
Can I save my case so I got time to say my
There name? You go. You can say it. There you go. Go before it.
Okay. Here's the thing. Patty is Patty. There is nobody else in Patty. I live for the day somebody will throw a shoe at me, and her name is Patty LaBelle. But Aretha, Bad Attitude and all, has amazing musicality. Like, from her writing, especially, like, her early days to arranging, like, ain't no way can still make... Aretha is the only artist I know that can make me cry off the sound of her voice. Hurt so bad off of Waiting to Exhale, I still cry. When I hear that song. And
you know
I've
what?
I've never been hurt like Burna Dance been hurt. But
you know what?
Cry.
You are given, that was a great answer. Just like the last time with Whitney when she was on the show, she gave a great answer for hers as well. I'm going to give, you're not going to get a What's Wrong With You on that one, but you definitely going to get a negative 20 because you're supposed to say Patty on that one. You're not getting a What's Wrong With You, you get a negative 20. So, okay.
I told you it was real.
Where's the mute button at? I can't ever find it during this time. Where's the mute button at? I can't find it. Okay, the next one, I feel like this is going to be the last one. Brian McKnight or Babyface?
Babyface.
There we go. You're talking right. There we go. You don't know how much that one is a trigger. Because sometimes I be knowing, and then people come on, and then they start, you know, just saying blasphemous things. I'm like,
well, you said based on catalog.
Yes.
Babyface wins every time.
There we go.
You talking right. Throw one out there, EB, before we wrap up the show. Throw one real quick.
All right, we're gonna throw one out there. We're gonna do debut albums.
Okay. Ooh.
Erykah Badu.
I knew you were gonna do it.
You knew I was gonna do it.
I felt it in my soul. Oh God.
Erykah Badu or Jill Scott, the debut album.
Horrible individual, EZ.
What you want, Baduism, or you want words and sounds, volume?
Who is
Jill Scott?
Jeez, man, you threw a horrible.
Okay.
Woo.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I have to go with you.
Oh. Okay.
I love Erykah, but I have to go with Jill. Jill was and still is like quintessential for me. Like her, the first time I saw Getting in the Way, I felt like I was looking at myself in the future. Like,
it's a great album.
And then when I got the whole album, I have an unreleased, never before heard live album that she did of The Real Thing. It is two discs. It is
so
in
do
my
I.
Player
you got
right
something
now.
In common.
I think I have one. Yeah, I got to check my
was
little
it in Chicago? Chicago? Ooh, yeah, mine was live in Chicago. Yes.
Yeah.
Mine is live in Chicago. I listened to that. She defies description.
Yes. Oh, man, we got a minute left. We're going to try to hurry to wrap up real quick. We'll play the Emmy wrap-up music on us real quick. Okay, we're going to do... Yeah, that was a great answer. If you had said her Baduism live album, that would have been hard because that's joint.
Right.
Ooh,
but
yeah,
because
I would probably have to go with Baduism live.
Yeah, but okay, what we're going to do right now, you plug all our social media before he plays the wrap-up music on us.
Okay.
Go first. Let them know where they can find you at, what you're working on.
Okay, my name is Cookie Turner. That is COOKI, no E, because I'm not food. I might look tasty, but I am not food. You can find me on all social media, either under Cookie Turner or Miss Cookie. That's MISCOOKI. Or you can just go to my website, which is CookieTurner.com, and find out about all things me, including my branding company called Dope Artistry.
There we go. Go ahead, EB.
All right, y'all know where to find me. EB, the number 4, Prez, PERZ, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and the website, ebforprez.com. We do, music appreciation there, old soul.
There we go. You can find me at Kula and Green on all social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You go to soulsavage.com. We got some good stuff coming up for y'all on the website. Go check that out. Y'all can check out last week's show with the legend Karen White. I love all the feedback we've been getting from that. We got a lot of great hits from that. Thank y'all for giving all the comments and the emails and all that stuff. I'm going to read them. We're going to go over it sometime next week. But, yeah, thank y'all to who sat and listened to that whole interview because it was amazing. The Soul Savage page is Facebook and Twitter. And we used to do a Savvy Heathen Talk with all the guests, but we ran out of time. But my Savvy Heathen Talk is, Will, you can still... Like what Shona said in The Last Dragon, you can kiss Prince's Converse heels. Because overlook the disrespect. And I got another. What you talking about a minute ago?
No, you've been disrespectful. and blasphemous.
My next Savvy Heathen Talk is if somebody gives you a Gene Echo album, throw it in the trash can like the K. Michelle and the Keith Coleman. Okay, we tune into Soul Savage Radio. We will be back next week every Friday, 5 to 7 Pacific time, 7 to 9 Central time, 8 to 10 Eastern time. Yeah, if somebody gives you an album, throw it in the trash and throw it in the trash with the K. Michelle and the Keisha Cole albums as well. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to all the guests. Thank you to Jamar. Thank you, Cookie. Thank you, Jamar.
Hey, this has been the Soul Savage Show.
Thank you, Cookie.
Cookie. No problem. Thank you, guys.
Cookie Turner, thank you so much for joining us on the Soul Savage Show with the outrageous Q Lynn Green and EB.
Thank you.
This has been an absolute pleasure.
Why gotta be all that?
And Studio W is not responsible for the language that some of our hosts, namely Q-Lynn Green, uses on this show.
All right. This is fake news because he endorses all of it. Don't believe him, people. He endorses every single part of it.
Hey, folks, have fun. Great show. Hey, thank you so much, Cookie. And have a good night. EB, Q-Lynn Green. Hey, this has been the Soul Savage Show here on Studio W, your global radio network. Good night, Q-Lynn.
Listen to the Soul Savage Show.